Welcome back to Beat Seeker. I'm your host, Matt McButter. In each episode, we explore the shifting world of music with world-renowned experts and artists to take you deep, deep inside the fascinating and changing world of music technology and music discovery.
And I'm your host, Mike Weider, reminding you to subscribe in Apple Podcasts and give us a five-star rating if you like the episode. You can visit our website at beatseeker.fm, where you'll find plenty of rabbit holes with extra content to dive into, guest backgrounds, and even a playlist with music recommendations from each of our guest episodes. Also, BeatSeeker swag. You can stay current and talk to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at BeatSeekerPod. Ever get the chills when listening to some amazing music? It used to be something that occurred accidentally, but is now something that's being engineered by artists and influencers into a more potent form called ASMR. ASMR, or Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, has captured the attention of the internet with millions of people watching viral clips of whispered voices, delicate hand movements, or tapping.
Our guide to ASMR is Julia Poerio, an associate lecturer at the University of Sussex. Dr. Poerio is a world-renowned expert on ASMR and was one of the first academics to conduct formal studies on the subject. She joins us from Essex, England. Julia, welcome to Beat Seeker.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
Julia, there's a strange growing trend on YouTube, social media, Spotify. It's a phenomenon called ASMR. And as one of the leading researchers in ASMR, we're hoping you can help us understand this amazing sensation. I mean, what it is and, you know, what it stands for, why it's such a big sensation, and maybe even get into how it's being used in music. So first of all, let's start with the basics. What does ASMR stand for and what is it?
Okay, so it stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. So that, as a term, is pseudoscientific. It doesn't really mean anything, but it was coined in 2010 to try and put a name to a particular kind of feeling that lots of people said that they experienced during certain situations. So it's basically a term that's kind of stuck around to describe this particular sensation. So the sensation of ASMR itself is often described as a kind of tingling sensation. It's very pleasant, that starts at the crown of your head. It's very relaxing, but also quite euphoric at the same time, and it can kind of spread downward. So it's a very kind of relaxing state. And people who claim to experience this sensation say that they will experience it in a variety of situations, which include common what are called ASMR triggers or elicitors. And these will include things like whispering, somebody speaking softly to you, tapping sounds, even the sounds of people eating. Lots of different kinds of things can kind of trigger or elicit this sensation in people who are capable of experiencing it.
So this is different than from, you know, people say, oh, the hair stood up on the back of my neck. It's different than that sort of sensation, like get it when you're sort of freaked out when something scary happens or in a scary movie. It's different than that.
Yeah, so what you're describing is what we call emotional piloerection, which is just a fancy way of saying hair standing on end. And as humans, some of us, not all of us, experience emotional piloerection, which can be induced by music, where it's called music-induced chills, but it can also be induced by kind of experiences of awe or witnessing kindness and things like that. So you're getting this physiological response of your kind of hair standing on end. ASMR is different to that because we don't think it involves piloerection, but it is still a complex emotional response in the same way that kind of getting chills to music is. But it's just not quite the same, and they have slightly different underlying physiologies. We're actually comparing the responses of music-induced chills and ASMR at the moment in the lab as well to see what the differences are. And you can measure chills, the chills response that you're talking about with something called a goose cam. So you can measure the extent to where the chills are happening and things like that. So there are ways to kind of quantify these things. But what you're describing, I think a lot of people would be familiar with, which is this experience of chills in response to some kind of emotional situation. But that's not ASMR. ASMR is very much a kind of a tactile, warm. Some people describe it, which I love, is like somebody getting a can of Coke, warm Coke, and pouring it over your head, and it feels like bubbling and fizzing under the skin.
Interesting. I can't say I've ever experienced it. I don't know if I have. We used to do this thing when I was a kid, crisscross applesauce, you know, that thing. And that was to sort of induce. Is it similar to that?
Yeah, so that's such a good example. So actually, people often forget that ASMR is commonly triggered or elicited by people touching you. So often, because now there's ASMR content on YouTube, you think that it's just whispering or, like, you know, soft speaking or tapping or these kinds of sounds. But actually, when people talk about their first memories of ASMR, it will be things like playing the letter trace game on your back, where, you know, you have to guess a letter, or somebody, you know, doing lots of different things where they're touching you or playing with your hair. Haircuts is a really common first experience of ASMR. So yes, it is a kind of similar thing. But the thing is, you're getting a tactile sensation very much located in your head. So you're almost feeling touched on your head without actually being touched on your head. So it's a kind of interesting thing.
We have this sort of head massager. It's like, you must be familiar with it. It's
orgasmatrons, they're called, apparently.
Is that what it's called? Yeah, because I mean, one or two of those and it triggers a very, like, nice sensation in me. So is that similar to some of the... Yeah, what physiologically, what's happening to my body when if I do experience ASMR?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really interesting that you do say that, because I often will say to people, and have one of those things in my lectures when I talk about this, and say, is like... this feeling, it's like getting a head massage without ever actually being touched there. So it's a kind of non-real type of touch, we think, is one of the things that's going on with it. But physiologically speaking, I think one of the things that we've tried to do is basically establish whether or not ASMR is a real thing. So a lot of people, if they don't experience this, they're like, what do you mean you get, like, a weird tingling sensation when you hear people whispering? And they're just like, what's going on? But we know from research on music-induced chills that there are specific patterns of physiology, so things that are going on in your body that reflect these kinds of complex emotional responses that maybe not necessarily everybody has, right? So we really took inspiration from that research and kind of transferred it to ASMR and looked at people's physiological responses when they're exposed to ASMR stimuli, depending on whether they are people who say that they can experience this kind of unusual tingling versus not. And we see what's really interesting, a kind of a pattern of physiology that is characterized by reductions in heart rate and increases in skin conductance response, which is the kind of sweating of the skin. So we think that there is this kind of underlying physiological pattern that characterizes an ASMR response. So we think we've got quite good evidence that people aren't just making it up, basically.
Cool. So how long has this research been going on for, and how did you get involved in this area of study? This is very niche.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, I've always been kind of interested in emotional experiences, and especially positive and complex ones, lots of different things. So, I mean, we've been researching ASMR since 2013. So the research that I spoke to you about was actually published in 2018, and that was kind of one of the first papers, and we've just continued to do research on it. But, I mean, I got into it because I've experienced ASMR for my whole life, and I thought I was a freak, basically. So I thought that I was, like, the only person in the world who got this thing, and I used to seek it out as a kid. And this is, bear in mind, I'm old enough to, like, be pre-internet in my childhood. So this is before there was anything on YouTube. So I would experience this in my real life as a kid. And I would be like, oh, this is so nice. I just want to prolong it. It's making me feel really sleepy. And then I found out, because somebody coined this term for it and people started talking about it, I was like, oh my gosh, it's not just me. There are other people out here. And then I thought, okay, there must be some research. So then I looked, and there was nothing. So there was nothing at that time that had been published on this, and I just couldn't believe it. So then that kind of inspired me to start researching it, really. It's just a kind of, why has nobody done anything on this? It doesn't seem to be that rare of an experience. And even if not everybody can experience it, maybe there are benefits to these kinds of things, even if you don't get that kind of tingling, right?
Well, we want to talk to you a little bit about some of those benefits, but before we get there, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the triggers. So in preparation, for this interview, I watched a bunch of these videos on YouTube that you're describing that claim to trigger ASMR. And I have to say that there's a lot of them that are pretty bizarre. And, many of them involve very odd scenarios where people are whispering or they're crinkling paper. There's often maybe a sound that's, if you have headphones on, they're going between your left and right ear, swapping. And there was one that a lot of people pointed to about, there was a woman who's folding towels while whispering to you repeatedly. Yeah. Okay, so maybe explain this. Like, what are they trying to do here? What are the common triggers? And how do they impact different people?
Okay. Yeah. So, it's such a good question. And we are doing research into the different kinds of things that trigger ASMR. I have to say that the most common reported trigger for ASMR is soft touch. So actual touch. So somebody stroking your arm or playing with your hair. So that's not something that you can get from an ASMR video, although you will notice that lots of ASMR videos try and simulate touch or make you feel as if you might be being touched.
Yeah, there were sort of hands coming at me in the videos. Yeah.
So that kind of sense of somebody's going to touch you or they are touching somebody else's hair and you're feeling that touch as if it was on yourself, that kind of thing. So a lot of these kind of more traditional role play type videos are in some way simulating touch. So touch is a very common sensory modality that will elicit ASMR. Auditory kind of triggers tend to go around kind of vocal triggers. So things like whispering sounds, soft speaking, but also specific kind of letters or intonations, accents, things like that. So is a common one. And also there are now kind of trigger words, which are like toasted coconut. So there's like those kinds of things. So there appear to be certain vocal characteristics that are more eliciting for people.
Yeah, well, the people seem to be speaking in a pattern that they had a certain cadence to how they were whispering, but it wasn't just whispering. It was sort of whispering with a certain a cadence that, that they seem to be common in a lot of these videos.
Yes. Yeah. So there is definitely something about the dynamics of the sound, and repetitive elements also seem to be quite common, whether that's in kind of vocal characteristics, but also things like sounds like repetitive tapping or typing and things like that. So there's kind of this collection of auditory that are vocal triggers. So, even things like wet mouth sounds, all of those kinds of things. And then you've got the kind of more non-vocal triggers. So like tapping, the crinkling, all of those kinds of things. And then you have what I think is probably the most interesting type of trigger, which is the interpersonal aspects of these things. So this is this like close personal attention thing that many, many people find incredibly creepy, because there's this kind of sense of intimacy of somebody's giving you a haircut or they're doing this kind of they're treating you in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of people find that very aversive. But this close personal attention is a kind of a very common and consistent ASMR trigger. So that could be somebody, just helping you with something. Some people say that they get ASMR when people lend them things. So they lend, like kindness and things like that. So
really? Okay.
Socially intimate contexts. So there's this interpersonal element. Then there is also a visual element, which can be to do with kind of symmetry and things like that. So the towel folding that you mentioned is a kind of repetitive, but it's careful, it's slow, it involves delicate hand movements. It probably involves some kind of speaking. So often what you get in ASMR eliciting type situations is an integration combination of these different kinds of triggers. So it's not as simple as I go like this, tapping, and everyone's like, oh, I'm getting ASMR. It's not like a one-to-one mapping of trigger sound to ASMR response. It just doesn't work like that, right? And a lot of people, I think, get confused because they're like, and you're like, no, that doesn't absolutely nothing for me. It's about lots of different aspects of it taken.
Okay. So you've got these triggers and they induce this sort of tingling sensation. But I guess the question is why, what is the outcome? And it seems like that people are talking about a deep feeling of relaxation and euphoria that is pleasant. Is that the driver? I got the sense that a lot of these videos were targeted at trying to help people sleep, and that people were maybe watching these who had trouble sleeping. Maybe you could just talk about some of the outcomes or the benefits that you have observed or studied.
Yeah, so I mean, this is so true. A lot of people, I think, will tap into ASMR content online rather than having to wait for it to happen, you know, in their daily lives, because they can get into this state that helps them to fall asleep. Now, the question, scientifically speaking, is, does it actually help with sleep? And if so, how does it do that? So there are a couple of ideas about what might be happening. So it could be that, for example, you're just putting yourself into physiologically a state that is, you know, you're better able to initiate sleep, right? So you're feeling sleepy, tired, blah, blah, blah. It could be that one of the reasons why you find it difficult to sleep is because you're very sensitive to sensory stimulation, like sounds, right? And actually, the very same capacity that might make you able to experience ASMR might be the thing that also prevents you from getting to sleep. Right.
So
there's a little bit of an irony
there. Right.
But there's that. And then there's, of course, questions about, you know, is it just distracting you from the kind of cognitions that you might be having that might be preventing you from getting to sleep? And then there's also questions about, well, actually, even if it's helping you get to sleep, does it help you stay asleep? Does it improve your sleep quality? Like, what effect does it have? So these are all questions that we don't yet have answers to. So even though anecdotally people say, oh, yes, I use ASMR and it really helps me with my sleep, well, the evidence to support that is lacking because we haven't done the studies.
Okay.
But at least anecdotally, that's what people say. And we know, physiologically speaking, that it lowers heart rate. So that might be something going on there. But then, of course, you've got the problem of like, okay, well, then you're going to sleep with headphones on and then you might wake up. And so, you know, we don't just assume that just because, you know, some people say it anecdotally that that's proof for something, right?
So it sounds like there's a lot of research to be done. That's really fascinating. You know, you mentioned a little bit about the fact that there are people who can experience ASMR and some that can't. As I understand it too, there's people who can experience it. There's people who are kind of neutral. It doesn't do anything for them. And then there's people who maybe even might have a negative response. But maybe you could just talk a little bit about that. Have you done any studies to understand, you know, what percentage of the population that would fall into those categories?
Yeah. So, I mean, so we haven't done the kinds of studies that would allow us to give you a really good, accurate population estimate. But the best estimate that we've got from some research is that around 20% of people will experience ASMR as I've described it. There are, as you said, a proportion of people that even if they don't get the tingling, they might find this content relaxing and pleasurable. And I think a lot of people who fall into that category may think they experience ASMR because they enjoy watching ASMR videos, but I wouldn't consider them to be an ASMR responder. And then you have, of course, other people who really dislike this stuff. So it causes the opposite reaction. And that for me is not an ASMR response at all, because it's not pleasant. It is a negative reaction to ASMR content. And that's, you know, a slightly different thing. And within that, you have, you know, a lot of people that are sensitive to specific kinds of sounds. So in particular, there's something called misophonia, which is hatred of sound, but it's specific anger, irritation and things like that in response to sounds like eating sounds,
chewing or whatever,
tapping, like all of those kinds of things. I mean, what's interesting is that people with ASMR also show higher rates of misophonia. So there's a little conundrum in there as well, which is actually just very interesting. But yes, a lot of people will not like ASMR content because they don't like the sounds. But often I think it's because of the socially intimate nature of a lot of these videos that people find very uncomfortable.
Right. So there could be other more complicated reasons intermixing there. Maybe, you know, one last question before we get to the music part. I understand that people who experience ASMR repetitively or may watch a lot of these videos, that the experience may fade over time. Is that accurate? And if so, like why do you think that happens?
Yeah, so this is what has become known in the kind of the ASMR community as ASMR immunity. But it is essentially is just a habituation type response. So you overexpose yourself to anything and you kind of, your response is lowered. So that's a consistent thing.
You desensitize
thing
yourself to the stimulus.
Yeah. You habituate essentially.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like if I, you know, was going to give you electric shocks, for example, and loads and loads and loads, like your sensitivity to that might decrease over time because you're habituated to the stimulus, right? So it's not just an experience that is, you know, common to
other stimuli.
Yeah. But it's like tolerance, essentially. So you build up a tolerance, and that means the threshold to get you to that point is harder. So I think it's common across different things. We haven't started looking at it, but what we do in experimental studies, we ask people not to engage with ASMR content before they come into the lab for this very reason. So we don't want people to have been like watching 20 hours of ASMR before they come in, and then they can't experience ASMR in the lab.
20 Very hours cool. of towel folding. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I could watch that. That would be great for me.
So Julia, we want to talk a little bit about ASMR and music, and it seems like a number of artists are incorporating ASMR triggers right directly into their music, either, you know, consciously or maybe even, you know, not consciously, I don't know. Billie Eilish comes up a lot, and The Weeknd as well. So do you think they're doing, is there research into this area? Are they doing this? Have you looked at whether they're doing this consciously or not? I found one ASMR YouTuber, and all she does is covers, she says and sort of whispers covers of Billie Eilish songs as her ASMR content.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, going down this rabbit hole has been very strange.
I can imagine. So, I mean, in terms of incorporation into music, I know that some artists do deliberately incorporate ASMR sounds into things. And the question is, why? I mean, for me, is it that is it a kind of a jumping on the bandwagon of something that is popular, or is it like because they are intending to induce ASMR? I suspect maybe it's not about inducing ASMR. Maybe it's something about the qualities of the sound. The other thing is that, of course, people might be noticing and labeling these things as ASMR, even if they weren't intended to be, just because awareness of what ASMR is, it has increased. So I don't know about the direction of causality. I think it's Holly Henderson and there's some rap artists that have said deliberately that they incorporate ASMR triggers into music. Of course, the one trigger that they can't incorporate is touch. But yes, I've seen it happening. It also happens in film. So Peter Strickland's a famous kind of film producer that has been consciously using ASMR for years in his film. So it is definitely something that has infiltrated, you know, artistic endeavors. But whether or not it actually induces ASMR, I guess I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some very overt ones, like the one Matt was talking about the woman who is whispering Billie Eilish. Okay, that's obviously ASMR specific. But I listened to this other song by The Weeknd that people referenced. It's called After Hours. And I wouldn't have noticed it unless I'd watched these other videos before, because then all of a sudden I started hearing these crinkly noises, and it seemed to be very specifically that this sound has been engineered in there. So I don't think there's specific validation of that, but once you hear these noises, then you can hear it very specifically what they're doing.
Yeah. Unless that's an effect of expectation. You know, because you're looking for them. It's like satanic lyrics when people heard satanic lyrics when playing songs backwards, right? If you're led
Stairway to Heaven?
Yeah, is that the one? Yeah, like all of those kind of things, you know. So these are the kinds of things that, you know, as a researcher, I'm like, I would want to test that in a scientific way. But yeah, there's no doubt that people use ASMR triggers as inspiration for lots of different things, which is probably just because it's part of popular culture. Like, it's an advert all the time, whether consciously or not.
Yeah, this genre of you know, creators on YouTube and Spotify and TikTok. They're calling them ASM artists. And I mean, it seems like it's growing. So why do you think this is blowing up right now? And it seems so popular.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I do a Google Trends analysis of the term ASMR just to see how it fluctuates over time. I think, you know, I don't know whether it is still growing. It's certainly, the last time I checked, it was still one of the most popular YouTube searches. It could just be a snowball type thing where people are just hearing it more, then they're looking at it more, they're getting some benefit to it. I don't really know how these things work in terms of public popularity. But yes, I think there's always this kind of perception that it's increasing, but sometimes you become more aware of stuff and examples of stuff when you're thinking about it. So if, you know, I still meet people and they're like, what do you mean ASMR? And then I tell them and they're like, oh, ASMR's everywhere 2 weeks later. And it's, they only noticed it because they've been made aware of
it. Yeah. Yeah. I know that phenomenon where all of a sudden you hear about something and then it's everywhere and it probably was already everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild. So hopefully we've, you know, introduced a couple of listeners to, you know, to the concept for the first time. And so for the ASMR curious who might want to try and experience this, what advice do you have for them?
YouTube, just go on YouTube. I mean,
YouTube ASMR.
YouTube, just YouTube it. And what I would say is try and maybe link ASMR with something that you're interested in. So like if you're somebody that really likes books, type in ASMR books. If you're somebody that likes music, ASMR music, do you know what I mean? So link it to something that you're already interested in. If you think you might be creeped out, don't click on the videos that look highly interpersonal or intimate, and go for ones that are maybe are more sound-based and less social in nature. Or just go and watch like a Bob Ross and see what you feel. So so many people say that Bob Ross was their first ASMR experience always.
Like, he's the OG of ASMR.
He's the OG of ASMR. So there's actually, I think if you go on YouTube, the loads of people have been watching these videos, but there's an exhibition on ASMR at the Design Museum in London. At the moment, it's going over to China, but they've got a whole section devoted to Bob Ross paintings and videos of him explaining things, because there's many ASMR triggers in a Bob Ross, but that would be unintentional ASMR.
Amazing. I'm going to have to dive into this even more. And I'm thinking of Bob Ross in a completely different, I never thought of him as an ASM artist before, but
he is the original.
He is the OG.
Yeah.
Amazing. So Julia, we also like to ask all of our guests if they have a music recommendation that we can put on our guest picks playlist. So do you have something that you're into lately we can put on there?
Oh my gosh. What have I been listening to? I never really listen to new music. I'm never a new music. So it would never be. It would be something from like the 80s.
That's cool. Yeah. Pull something from the vault.
I don't know. What have I got that I've been? I have pretty odd music taste, I think. I tend to like songs that trigger quite an intense emotional reaction. So let me see if I've got my chills playlist.
Oh, that would be perfect. Yeah, something chill inducing.
So, I mean, so many songs will be chill inducing for me. Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing always gets me.
Excellent pick.
A classic.
Love it. Oh, okay. So one song that I always get chills to, and I don't know where I found it. I think it was part of the Gladiator movie, but I listen to this on repeat all the time when I want to feel something. And it's called Song to the Siren by This Mortal Coil. I don't know if you know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like ethereal, and like there's something about it that just, I don't know, every time that song will consistently.
I'll check it out. If it's on the Gladiator soundtrack, then I've heard it many times because I've seen that movie 50 times. So
yeah, but okay. I don't think it's not a Hans Zimmerman one, because I think also that stuff I love too, but it's a woman. But yeah, listen to it. It's great.
Cool. All right. And finally, if listeners want to follow you or your work, where's the best place for them to go?
Good question. So, I mean, people are always welcome to email me. I have like a web profile. I'm not on any social media. that's a kind of deliberate choice. But yeah, email. I generally try and respond to people if they reach out, and then web pages and things like that.
Sounds good. We'll put a link to your web profile in the show notes as well for our listeners. And Julia, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and telling us about ASMR.
No worries. It was fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Beat Seeker with your hosts, Matt McButter and Mike Wider. If you like the show, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts and hit the subscribe button. While you're there, leave us a rating and a comment and share it with your friends and colleagues. If you want to dig deeper into this content, visit beatseeker.fm. That's BEATseeker.fm. Interact with us on social media at BeatSeekerPod. Beat Seeker is recorded in the Devil Lake Studios and the Tunnel Under Arundel. The show is produced by Matt McButter, Mike Wider, and Kate McCartney. Thanks for tuning in, and keep seeking.